Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel. Travel pro, Devon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Well, hello, fellow Culturati. Devon Harley here, your host and travel pro, right here on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. The website is travelingculturati.com. Check it out. Today, our healthcare professional, Yolanda Como, is here with information and tips on preventing and dealing with foodborne illnesses. We've also got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and the culture report. But right now, I've got some travel news. Summer airfares have hit a 7-year low. Airline predictor app Hopper constantly monitors prices to find great deals and notifies you the instant you should buy. The app recently made a prediction on summer airfares and in a recent report found that summer domestic airfares will be the lowest in 7 years. They're projecting flight prices this summer will be down 12% from last year and more than 20% from the last 2 years. Airfares in June will be at lower seasonal levels than they've ever been since 2009. The Hopper app predicts future flight prices with 95% accuracy. And if you select the Watch the Trip button, Hopper will constantly monitor prices and notify you the instant you should buy. Domestic destinations with the biggest decrease in search demand on Hopper since last month are Orlando, New Orleans, Los Angeles, and Hawaii. International destinations with the biggest decrease in search demand on Hopper since last month include Cabo, London, and Rome. Well, now, the summer is right around the corner. Chef, author, and TV personality Anthony Bourdain doesn't eat on planes, and here's why, he told Bon Appetit. No one has ever felt any better after eating plane food. I think people only eat it because they're bored. I don't eat on planes. I like to arrive hungry. Well, he just might be onto something here. Airplane food is usually loaded with sodium, which can cause other problems like fatigue, swelling, headaches caused by dehydration. Not to mention, it probably isn't that good unless you're in business or first class. Also, arriving hungry can ward off feeling sluggish, and like Bourdain, I'd rather save my calories for something more worthwhile. He does, however, have another strategy. If it's a super long flight, he says, I eat some cheese and drink myself stupid. Well, he's done this before, and he's on TV, so he must be right. Folks, it has arrived. It's here, the world's largest cruise ship. Just when you think things couldn't get any larger, they have. Royal Caribbean's The Harmony of the Seas has made it out of the shipyard, and it's been delivered. The world's largest cruise ship is a 120,000-ton mega ship that cost $1.1 billion and took almost 3 years to build. It has 16 decks and a whopping capacity of 6,700 passengers and 2,100 crew. Cruisers can expect a bionic bar with robot bartenders, a flow rider surfing experience, the open-air Central Park promenade, and an aqua theater with live performances. There's also Jamie's Italian from celebrity chef Jamie Oliver. There are water slides that descend down 10 decks from a glass platform more than 150 feet above the ocean. Cruising just got bigger. We were warned that TSA security lines could get long this summer, but the long lines are already here. Across the United States, reports of long TSA security lines have already begun. Recently, a video of a lengthy line at Chicago's Midway Airport went viral. Los Angeles is reporting lines that extend from one terminal to another. Our executive producer flew out of Chicago O'Hare's International Terminal Sunday and was in the TSA security line for 2 hours. Good thing he arrived 3 hours in advance of his departure. By the time he made it through the security line, his flight was boarding. Now, some haven't been so lucky. Passengers at Chicago's Midway Airport missed their flight due to long lines that wrapped around the building. And more recently, passengers were stranded overnight at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. And passengers aren't the only ones complaining about the wait time. Airlines around the country and even the New York Port Authority are joining in about the wait time. American Airlines is asking passengers to post photos to social media about their long TSA security wait using the hashtag #IHateTheWait to show just how unacceptable the lines are. Remember I said earlier that we were warned about a rough summer? Well, it's May, which means it's just getting started. And I can only imagine what Memorial Day travel will look like, not to mention all those summer vacations. For the past several weeks, I've done a story on long lines, and it's only gotten worse. And Gary Rassicot, TSA Chief of Operations, told the New York Times, we're probably not at the staffing level we would like to be to address the volume. This is why we're talking about people getting to the airport a little earlier than planned. Be sure to budget extra time these next few months until a full solution is found. 3 hours, folks, or if you have time, get TSA PreCheck. Well, Delta Airlines has announced a major deal to help speed up airport security. They're taking matters into their own hands. The airline bought a 5% stake in the security company Clear with the intention to help speed up checkpoint experiences. Clear offers a program similar to TSA PreCheck for flyers who provide biometric data like fingerprints. In addition, Delta said it will give complimentary Clear membership for Diamond-level Elite members and discounts to SkyMiles loyalty program members. All others can purchase a Clear membership for $179 a year. Clear is pricier than TSA PreCheck, which costs $85 for 5 years. However, if lines don't improve anytime soon, people may pay just about anything to avoid a 3-hour security line. Delta's CEO, Ed Bastian, said the partnership with Clear would give members priority even over PreCheck flyers, stating they can go directly to the front of the TSA PreCheck queue. Clear was started in response to 9/11 by Stephen Brill to provide frequent travelers who would be vetted to help them get through security expeditiously vis-a-vis a known traveler program. But because of changes, TSA PreCheck and probably the price, it's only at about 13 airports around the U.S. Have you ever wondered how airlines decide when to kick a passenger off the plane? All you have to do is read the carriage of contracts. The airline's contract usually describes prohibited passenger behavior in such terms as disorderly, offensive, abusive, and intimidating, giving airlines the authority to move passengers from planes under the contract section about banned behavior. And the flight crew members have the ultimate decision on what specific acts are cause for the boot. Each passenger agrees to this contract of carriage when they buy the airline ticket. The problem is, no one reads it, and its terms are left for interpretation. Since the September 11, 2001 terror attack, passengers being removed from flights have become way too common. It seems that the flight personnel are exercising their authority and are having to focus more on passengers' behavior than ever before. Flight attendants charged with making the first assessment said they worry that ignoring a potential problem passenger on the tarmac could lead to a bigger disturbance at 35,000 feet. Flight attendants take classes on the latest security measures and routinely undergo cultural sensitivity training. While we certainly understand the decision, like with our unruly Yogi, who physically threatened passengers and crew, the man that had to be duct taped because he was fighting with other passengers and everyone who was involved in the brawl at 30,000 feet, you have to question decisions like when the mathematician was kicked off a plane for doing math, or when a Middle Eastern man was kicked off the plane for speaking Arabic on the phone. Now, I have every bit of respect for flight attendants and the job they do. I, for one, know that customer service is a tall order, and it sometimes comes with difficult decisions. It's just more costly, more aggravating. intimidating and disruptive to other passengers when things escalate to the point of being booted off the plane. And just remember, a passenger who displays a bad attitude towards the flight crew usually ends up being escorted off the plane. Well, Haiti has now become a part of Africa, and it will be official next month. The African Union will have 55 members. For the first time, not all members are in Africa. Haiti, the Caribbean nation, decided to be part of the African continent and will be the first non-African country to join the African Union bloc of nations. Culturally, though, a lot of people feel like the two are already joined. Haiti has been known as a little piece of Africa in the Caribbean. The primary benefit for Haiti in joining the AU are important economic ties. One of the main opportunities for Haiti when it joins the African Union will be when Africa develops industry. It will be looking for markets, and Haiti will be one of them. Joining the AU is for most Haitians also a symbolic step. This move has been discussed for several years. But taking Houston Delta Airlines Incorporated, American Airlines Group Incorporated, and United Continental Holdings will roll out cheap, no frill tickets. Before, they both said they were considering it, but now they're saying by the end of the year, the new economy fares will be a real thing. These new basic economy fares will not include standard benefits like advanced seat assignments. Instead, you'll have to reserve them at the airport. Tickets will be non-refundable, non-changeable, and non-upgradable. The new fares will, however, offer passengers an add-on for the very benefits that will be eliminated in the real pricing at a cost, of course. Both airlines are still working out the details, and it's too early to know what effect new fares will have on the ultra discounters, according to a Spirit spokesman. So let's see how this all plays out. Well, on April 21st, I was in Budapest when I heard the news that Prince had passed away. I am still feeling that loss. It hit some of us like a ton of bricks, and we realized what a special talent he was, and what a great loss for the world. Shortly after, landmarks around the globe paid homage to his musical majesty, from the Art Center in Australia to the Eiffel Tower in Paris, including my favorite, Niagara Falls, the world turned purple. There's something else. A tribute concert in the works that will take place in Minneapolis, and Sheila E. has signed on as a musical director. Sheila E., along with others who were very close to Prince, have revealed that his Paisley Park estate may be turned into a museum. She recently told ET Online that Prince had always had plans to turn his home into a museum. She said he's been gathering memorabilia and stuff from all the tours, like her drum and his motorcycle. Well, it's too soon for any concrete plans to be revealed, but whenever it happens, I'll be there, donning my raspberry beret. You know, that's all I've got for travel news for you today. When we come back, we'll have Javon's Travel Minute, Yolanda Como with healthcare tips, and the question of the week. Don't go anywhere. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culture Roddy, exclusively on HUR Voices, SiriusXM, Channel 141. Join Traveling Culturati and Advantage International for the once-in-a-lifetime trip to Washington, D.C. for the historic opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. The National Museum of African American History and Culture will be a place where all Americans can learn about the richness and diversity of the African American experience. Join us as we visit the museum. Enjoy a nighttime tour of the monuments. Our package includes air from Chicago, accommodations at the J.W. Marriott, tours, selected meals, and events. Go to advantage-intl.com for complete information and to book. Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati is all about the style and culture of travel. Make sure you visit the website. It's travelingculturati.com, and we want you to join our travel club.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
I'm about to embark on a girlfriend's getaway. Now, I've traveled with these ladies before, and we've discovered that we travel well together. Notice I said travel well together and not get along. That's two different things. Getting along may mean you get along for short periods of time without any major decision making. Traveling well together means you are well traveled. You have some of the same travel budgets in mind and the same interests. Believe me, that makes a huge difference. So before you embark on your girlfriend's getaway, follow these rules. Set expectations in advance on what you'll spend and what you'll do together. Choose your travel buddies wisely. Have they traveled before? Have they traveled with you or others before? How often do they travel? And what activities do they like to do? Schedule alone time or downtime. And finally, while it's okay to elect one person to be in charge of the planning, get everyone involved in the process. This way, you won't end up with frenemies. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Deli belly affects nearly half of all international travelers. And while it's considered to be most common in India and other tropical countries, consider this. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 48 million foodborne illnesses occur right here in the United States every year. So today, Yolanda Como, our healthcare professional, is back to shed some light on foodborne illnesses. Well, welcome back, Yolanda.
Well, thanks, Javon. So great to be back.
Well,
another interesting topic.
It is another interesting topic. It's something that we do have to contend with. And so if we can have more information about it, maybe we can lower some of our risks. Well, let's start with what is a foodborne illness.
So a foodborne illness, you probably know in layman terms, is food poisoning. But essentially what it is, it's just bacterial pathogen. You probably heard of E. coli, which is Escherichia coli, hepatitis A, or even salmonella. So you contract this from fecal to oral route, and it's essentially how a person has prepared your food and they've contaminated the goods, and you've eaten it, and now you're ill.
And that's always so disturbing, especially when you say fecal and food. Those two should just not be in the same sentence together. But it is the unfortunate reality of a foodborne illness.
It is what it is. And, you know, the hardcore information on it is a person going to the bathroom and they're not washing their hands.
Yikes.
They come back to prepare your food. So that's how the foods are contaminated.
Who are the travelers that are at risk of contracting a foodborne illness?
Senior, older adults, pregnant women, younger children, and people with weakened immune systems. And this can be really detrimental. I mean, there's a greater chance of becoming more severely ill for the pregnant women because they can miscarry. That's how serious it is. Depending on how affected you are and how soon you can get treatment for it, the better it is. You would be off.
You would say that they're at greater risk, but anybody can get it.
Anybody can get foodborne illness. It all begins really when you begin to travel, and it starts on the airplane. The person comes to you and they serve you drinks, and you've said this before about don't take the ice if you're requesting a drink.
Yeah, I got that from my nephew who works for an airline, and as soon as he started working for them, and he worked in catering, and so they were in charge of the food and how it got from the airport to the aircraft. And one of the first things he said to all of us is, don't use the ice. Just say no.
He probably saw something, and, you know, it'll be different on even how they handle the ice.
Exactly. That's what
he was
saying.
I mean, they wore gloves when they were, like, dipping it from the packaging to put it in your cup, or how they load it on the plane. We all know, we're all guilty of this. You sit down, you're traveling, how often do you get to wash your hands? Yes, you are carrying around the little sanitizing bottles that are dangling off your bags. Your hand washing with soap and water is better, because a lot of times with the sanitizers, they're not able to really destroy or kill those spore-forming bacteria.
Okay. So what you're saying then is you can even contaminate yourself.
You can contaminate yourself. And, you know, those tables, tray tables, I really doubt if you're sanitizing them and cleaning them by the time you take that seat.
I clean mine.
Yeah, I mean, and that's great.
I like the wipes over the gel that you use. And if I only have a gel, then I squeeze it on the table and I take a and I wipe it down.
And that's great, and that's very good practice. However, you still should be washing your hands prior to taking in food, you're going to sit down and have a lunch that you purchased in the airport. So if that's the case, you need to wash your hands.
Right.
Yes, you already cleaned the table and you're all ready to have your snack, but still you're going to be transferring whatever bacteria into your meal.
Right. Well, and also with the hand sanitizers, I just think that I don't want that on my hands if I'm eating, because I don't know how well I'm going to digest that, the sanitizer.
No, and
so when I'm eating, I prefer to actually wash my hands than to use the hand sanitizers. How can you prevent contracting foodborne illness? And I like the acronym here, FBI.
Well, washing your hands. Okay, whenever you get a chance, please wash your hands. But the other thing is, like in hotels, a little simple thing is brushing your teeth. It's suggested that you use bottled water rather than tap water, depending on where you are.
I don't always. No. It depends on where I am. But certainly if the water comes out brown, I'm not going to brush my teeth with it.
Yeah, and you know, the bacteria are very microscopic, so you're not going to be able to see them or tell, you know, if it's clean water or not. So the suggestion is, if you can, please use bottled water when you're brushing your teeth. The other thing is that you should be doing, in terms of what you eat, the different foods that you're eating, because water, besides the food, water is going to affect you as well. So if you're having drinks, should not be like your alcoholic drinks. And they say you shouldn't even ask for the ice. So as much as we love ice, Americans, unless you know that they're making the ice with bottled water, you should not have it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Most ice is just made from tap water. So if you're in a country that you should not drink the water, then you should not use the ice. I make a good case for beer and wine that you don't need either.
You know how we love things cold, and get the ice situation unless they put it in the refrigerator and make it cold for you.
And we're one of the few cultures, if not the only culture, that really likes ice. When you go to other places, you have to ask for ice.
Right.
And then when you do, they may give you one or two cubes, and we look at them like they're crazy. Like, can I have some more ice? And then they look at us like we're crazy. Like, how much ice do you want?
I know. I think because they have smaller refrigerations. Like, we have these grand-scale refrigerators in our home. With the water and the drinks, you can have, like, soda drinks, like, once it's in the can. Tea, make sure the water is boiling hot, and it's not just warm.
So you should stay away from fountain drinks, and anything that should be served hot should be served piping hot. Okay. Now, are there any foods that are safer for consumption when you're traveling?
Well, if you are going to eat fruits, make sure that they have a peeling on it and you peel it yourself. The eggs, I know we all love our eggs in the morning, but just suggest that you eat a hard-boiled egg rather than an egg that they're scrambled or runny, because that could lead to bacteria being there.
Right, and salmonella.
Salmonella, definitely.
And actually, even here in the United States, as I stated earlier, with the number of cases of foodborne illnesses right here, I don't want anyone to think that, oh, it's just in those other countries. Illnesses is global, and so it's just a daily practice and then a smart practice, whether you're traveling domestically or internationally.
Well, we eat a lot of buffets here, and buffets can be a little scary, and it's kind of a no-no, because once again, the food is sitting there, and if it's not accurate temperature, then that's going to lead up to you becoming ill. And a lot of the buffet foods, they should be timed by the person who's monitoring that buffet station. Anything over 2 hours and at a certain temperature should be removed and replaced with fresh food. So if it's not something that's leaving the buffet station at a faster rate than someone in the back, there should always be someone monitoring the buffet station. You know, you go to these hotels in Vegas, you know, there's buffet city out there. So there, I'm sure everything out there is pretty, they're on top of how to monitor and maintain their buffet stations. But some of the places, if you pop into various restaurants, don't know. So just be careful, be cautious of your choices. If you are traveling abroad, things that you shouldn't have really is like salad. number one, is because they rinse the food, the lettuce, particularly with the tap water.
When you're talking about when you're traveling and other places, are there particular places where you can relax that kind of philosophy any more than others? Let's say, for example, if you're at the hotel versus not at a hotel.
So if you are at a hotel, you can have those items, but you know that they're using filtered water if it is a reputable hotel. Hotels, they monitor their foods and their dietary areas where they serve people very well.
So more than likely, hotels are using filtered water to wash their fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Okay.
But food vendors, that's another situation. Like if you, I often hear people say, like when they're traveling, I want to be with the locals. I want to eat what they eat. I want to, you know, see what do what they do, things that they're doing. But you have to be careful of those little vendors, the food carts on the street. And I have to say that I was a victim of that, and I should have went with my first mind. But I just had to have this wonderful-smelling falafel sandwich in Egypt Market. And I paid for it later.
Yeah.
I was so sick.
And I think the thing is that it can. I travel a lot, and I think that it can happen to anyone at any place at any time. And I am somewhat of a food warrior myself, and I do like that local experience, and I want to go to these local places. And sometimes you see this street vendor, and that's the thing, especially with food trucks today, and you want to try these things out and experience these things. The one case that I had was from a hotel in India on my last night. So here you have a situation at a street market food vendor, and I have one at a hotel, so I guess that it can just happen. So that brings me to my next question. What should you do if you think you have a foodborne illness or food poisoning?
So just be attuned to how you're feeling. With me personally, I just had extremely, extremely bad diarrhea. It might be a sense of dizziness may come over you, like intense dizziness. Immediately probably going to get a temperature. If there's any way you can take your temperature, if it's over 101, stay that way for the next 24 hours or so, you're coming down with some foodborne illness. If you have an inability to keep any solid foods down or even fluids, but what's important is you need to continue to hydrate yourself with water, fresh water, okay? Even though you're having issues with trying to keep it down, you need to keep trying to put it in.
Because you're losing a lot.
Right, you're going to start dehydrating. Now, when you get to a point where you are beginning to feel somewhat better and you think you can take in nourishment, you should probably take in bland foods like crackers, you know, little cookies, potatoes, bananas, you know, fruits like that. Stuff that's bland to you, but you're going to be able to tolerate. Avoid any caffeine, fatty foods, or spicy foods during that time, too.
That can aggravate the situation. What about any medications that you can either, well, let's say vaccinations or medications that you can take prior to your trip, and then also any medications that you should bring with you or that you can take to help alleviate those symptoms?
Well,
or
I'll tell you by experience. Before I travel abroad, I always go to a travel center. This happened to be one near where I work. The individual, healthcare professional, would say, okay, what's your agenda? Where are you going? What's your itinerary? From there, they can tell you what you need. So usually they give you Cipro now. If you're not allergic to Cipro for fluoxetine, that's the antibiotic. But they use it now also for food poisoning or food poisoning.
It's not over the counter?
It's not over the counter, and they probably give you like 7 days worth of the pills.
So they can give you, you can get a prescription for Cipro for precautionary, or just in case, if it happens, then you have something on hand.
Exactly. And I also, in the past, have gotten the hepatitis A booster shot to help ward off any foodborne illnesses as well. If you do happen to something bad and you have taken the shot, or you most likely are going to fend it off because you have that protection from the booster. Now, you don't get that every time you go, you know, on a trip, but I think it comes in like a 3-booster shot, and you have to get it like in, I think, 3 months after the first one and 6 months after the other one, and then you're good. I'm not sure if it's 5 or 10 years.
So the hepatitis A is a booster shot for things like bacteria or foodborne illnesses.
Exactly, because hepatitis A is essentially food poisoning.
Oh, okay, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, what about
If it's raw fish in any country, even in the hotel, just saying not to even eat it.
Well, I had a lot of sushi in Japan. But it kind of goes hand in hand. If you're in Japan,
they are the generators of... You
know
what? You're going to have to really just, you know, take some huge precautions when you're traveling in those regions. And know yourself, be aware of yourself when you're having it. I mean, I wouldn't say go in and begin to gorge on stuff. I mean, take your time, you know, eat small amounts and see how you do.
Well, I won't eat sushi in places that it's like, okay, no, this is not a sushi kind of place. I mean, you can't go to Japan and not have great sushi.
You have to have it. I know. And, you know, like, for the most part, I mean,
I'm not going to eat it off the street either.
No, if you can avoid street vendors, just avoid them. I mean, the food smells great. It looks great. If you are going to be on the street, maybe you should just have breakfast before you do your street walk. That way you won't feel the urge to purchase from the street. I mean, I remember in China, we did eat. Didn't we eat something off the street, like the corn, some corn?
Oh, those sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes.
This guy was riding a bicycle, and on the back of his bicycle, he had this container, and he had roasted sweet potatoes, and we all bought them from him, and they were delicious. They were really good. So that's why I asked about those food warriors, because let's face it, there are going to be some people who are very, very cautious, and they're not going to take those risks, and maybe they aren't huge foodies. And there's some people who just have sensitive stomachs and systems. With the amount of travel that I do, and it's always, you kind of jinx yourself when you say these things, but with the amount of travel that I do, I have only gotten ill from food once. And in all of my travels, I don't know if this really works, so I'm going to ask you, but maybe it does, and maybe this is the reason that I don't often get sick, is that I eat yogurt.
Yes.
And I eat yogurt more before I'm traveling, and I have it every morning when I'm at another, and when I'm traveling, when I'm on travel, because I read that the enzymes, the active cultures in yogurt help fight bacteria.
And it does. And yogurt is bacteria. It's like culture.
Right.
So what it does, I mean, you're right, and that's great that you do that, because I do the same thing. One thing you do want to make sure when you are having your yogurt that it is refrigerated. But, yeah, that's perfect. You do the right thing. And I would then, yes, prior to even beginning your travel, to start building up your system. It's like a protective coating to help ward off any infectious or dirty food.
Right.
Basically.
And I think some people just have sensitive stomachs.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those who have a sensitive stomach.
I got really, really sick.
Right.
I cannot forget that. That's been a while.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I've ever gotten sick.
Well, it can happen. Now, are there any websites or references or resources that we can give folks to use prior to their travels?
Well, a very good place, you can go to cdc.gov/travelershealth. It has an array of information on there for individuals who are traveling, things you can and cannot do, or should not do, rather, things you should and should not have, or eat, water, drink, food, things that are good to have. They also have an app, CDC, What Can I Eat?
Oh, that's a cool app.
Yeah, that's an app. You can always have that. Even here in the United States, if you're going to different cities, what should I eat? It'll keep it updated on what's coming up, what's going on now. If there's some infection across the country that they do a recall.
There's an app for just about everything, and it can really, really assist you in your travels. Well, Yolanda, thank you so much for joining me today and giving us such great information to protect yourself against foodborne illnesses. Coming up next is the question of the week. Recently, Harriet Tubman was selected as the new face on the $20 bill. Harriet Tubman was nicknamed Moses because of her success of helping slaves to freedom through what has been established as the Underground Railroad. Since Harriet Tubman is an American icon, and this is a piece of American history, Traveling Culturati took to the streets to see if America knew not only what the Underground Railroad was, but where it occurred.
Traveling Culturati, your girl Mo, always on the go, and I have
Mike.
Can you tell me what and where is the Underground
Hello?
Railroad?
Underground Hi. Railroad was a system that slaves.
Oh, I was down there, 350. No one was down there.
I can't answer that one. I don't know where that is at.
Okay, I'm coming back down. I came up here thinking I got the time wrong. Bye.
Okay, well, guess what? You got 50% of that question right, so I'm going to go ahead and give you a hey now, we are. Traveling Culturati with your girl, Mo, always on the go. And I have...
Greg.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm good.
Greg, this is Travel Month.
From time to time.
Do you know your history, Greg?
I know my history.
You know your history. Do you know world history?
Maybe. Sure.
What and where is the Underground Railroad?
Follows the Underground Railroad here in America, but it's not really underground. It's just a path that people took in the Civil War back in the 1800s, keeping slaves out of slavery.
Okay, okay. You know what? Technically, you were right, but do you know exactly where the Underground Railroad is?
Mississippi, Tennessee.
Traveling Culturati, your girl Mo, always on the go, and I have Alexandra. Can you tell me what and where is the Underground Railroad?
Underground Railroad. You have the wrong candidate for that one.
Okay, have you heard of the Underground Railroad?
I have, and why am I thinking Mississippi?
Well, it seems as if we know what the Underground Railroad was used for, but it doesn't seem like we know where the Underground Railroad is located. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go. Back to you, Javon.
Well, thanks, Mo. Well, it seems some of us know the Underground Railroad was neither underground nor a railroad. It got its name because it was carried out in secrecy and because railway terms were used to describe how it worked. Designated routes were lines. Safe places were called stations. Those who led the way were conductors, and the individuals being aided were known as packages or freight. The network of routes ran from slave states to and through 14 northern and free states, with the promised land of Canada. Harriet Tubman, the most famous conductor, used many routes to free slaves. However, one in particular was a path from the eastern shore of Maryland to Delaware, several stations along the way, then into Pennsylvania, New York, and some eventually went into Canada. Like Harriet Tubman, those who helped slaves escape to freedom using the Underground Railroad were members of free black communities, northern abolitionists, philanthropists, and church leaders. Historic sites can be found in many places like Ohio, Illinois, Florida, and Georgia, and there is the Harriet Tubman Byway in Dorchester, Maryland. To find site, you can Google Underground Railroad site. And for the Harriet Tubman site, visit HarrietTubmanByway.org. Well, now you are in the know with the Underground Railroad. When I come back, I've got the Culture Report. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.